Welcome to Discover You, an inspiring podcast exploring cutting-edge solutions to our everyday psychological challenges. We explore complex mental health issues and talk to professionals, experts, and renowned authorities at the forefront of transformative healing. Our mission is to educate and destigmatize, and to ultimately view mental health as a proactive quest for optimized living and equilibrium, rather than mere crisis intervention. Welcome to another episode of Discover You, our podcast exploring innovative and effective solutions to issues in mental and behavioral health. I'm J.D. Collinson, CEO of Montier Behavioral Health, a family of dynamic and comprehensive treatment centers in Southern California. I'm honored to introduce you to our truly wonderful guest today, Dr. Merrill Sprago. Dr. Sprago is a practicing psychiatrist in Los Angeles who is an expert in the treatment of OCD and depression and has been using transcranial magnetic stimulation therapy for over 10 years. His education includes a residency in perinatal psychiatry at the UCLA Women's Life Center, where he did a research fellowship as well as served as a volunteer clinical instructor. He's given numerous talks about the use of TMS in perinatal care, including doing grand round presentations at Cedars-Sinai. Dr. Sprago maintains a private practice for adults specializing in perinatal mental health, which has broadened into expertise in the integration of novel therapeutics, including the use of rTMS and ketamine. Welcome, Dr. Sprago. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
We at Montier have offered TMS therapy for several years and found it to be effective and non-invasive. In fact, we are about to open two new treatment centers, a neuro wellness clinic at our new outpatient facility specializing in neurological interventions and amongst them TMS, as well as utilize it in our women's trauma center. It's a relatively new therapy, and I'd love to get your take on how you got interested in it, and perhaps for those in our audience who don't know what it is, would you be able to give us a brief description of TMS and what types of disorders it treats?
I learned about TMS initially in 2006 when I was training at UCLA, and one of the attending physicians there had one of the early NeuroStar machines, and we had taken a look at that machine. And then I started using TMS in my practice around, 2011, 2012. And so as you mentioned, I do a lot of work with women's mental health and perinatal mental health. And what I wanted was women to be able to have an option to be able to have treatment for essentially depression without medications, because people were, concerned about medications, whatever that might be. And TMS seemed like an exciting and novel and biologically sound treatment to be able to offer to people. And so my interest in it started there and has expanded to treatment of lots of different patients, primarily with major depressive disorder, but with other disorders that don't seem amenable to standard therapy, as well as the idea of people who just don't want to take medications for side effects or otherwise.
That's an amazing gift that you're providing for these folks who really aren't able to tap into the traditional psychiatric interventions. I mean, traditionally, we utilize it for the treatment-resistant folk as well who don't want the medications and who are resisting that. What are some of the studies or the success rates associated with TMS?
Since 2009, even before that with FDA approval, there's been study after study after study after study, and all the consensus guidelines is it works, right? And, mm-hmm. And the incredible thing about it is it works. I've seen when nothing else does, and when it works, it's a game changer. The general data and all the studies that are out there show a really profound efficacy for the treatment. But when you see it in the real world, when you see it in your office, when you see it with people getting better who hadn't gotten better before, it's just wonderful.
It's an amazing thing. Wow.
Yeah.
How would you say physiologically would TMS be different than medication?
When you think about kind of the differences, when you think about a medication treatment, you're talking about just kind of a diffuse systemic approach, right? So medications can't choose different brain regions based unless there's receptors that are more in the brain regions, right? Whereas TMS is localized and focused. So when you look at like an fMRI study and you look at the fMRI studies that look at abnormalities in transmission and like depression, you can see that when people get better, those abnormalities kind of normalize. Mm-hmm. But when you're looking at kind of the exact process of TMS versus medication treatment, let me say it this way, is the idea is the focal treatment of TMS and the kind of more systemic or diffuse treatment of medications will create changes in the brain that approach remission, but the actual kind of circuitry and everything, it's probably a little different in terms of what's happening in each brain system studies.
Right. I mean, the obvious sort of distinction that comes to mind is the constant necessity to take the medication, whereas TMS, from my understanding, after 20 to 30 sessions, the efficacy, or even up to, I think, maybe 36 sessions, you'll correct me on the exact numbers, but
sure.
You should be able to feel those effects for, a significant period of time if you, before you need a tune-up, maybe a year or two?
Yeah, again, all good points, where the idea of, medication is daily therapy, and TMS, when you get treated for those 36 sessions, is daily based on the doctor's week, which is 5 days, so we can get our weekends off, essentially.
Right.
But at the end of the day, and there's protocols where you can do it quicker in some way. But once you're done with the treatment, and there are good follow-up studies in my experience in my practice too, is the treatment holds, right? There's studies out to a year, but things happen in people's lives, they can remit. But when people respond, and there's been, a cadre of different patients who have been on medications for a long time who have come off of them, and now they just get treated with TMS and they get maintenance treatments every so often. So once you're done with the treatment, you're pretty much done with it outside of other protocols, but what I'm really getting to is the idea is whenever you treat someone for depression and you bring them to remission, there needs to be some types of maintenance protocols, but the maintenance can be, instead of daily medication, an intermittent TMS session.
So if somebody is depressed, let's just shift gears for a moment,
sure,
because of unresolved trauma, and they haven't resolved their underlying issues, would TMS treatment circumvent the need for additional treatment? Can TMS on its own be the answer, or is it most effective, or even in the most effective scenario, does it still necessitate and require some additional trauma care, trauma treatment, or other forms of talk therapy?
Yeah, I mean, I think if someone were to say TMS wipes it all out and takes it away, that's probably someone to run away from. I think the idea, more importantly, is when people are depressed, it impairs their ability to think.
Mm-hmm.
And in a trauma-based brain or a trauma-based model, you really have to be able to get in there and be able to think about things. And so the less we're able to think, the more depressed we are, the more thought-based we are, the more negative we are, and the less ability we have to process information. Let's look at the lungs, right? The job of the lungs is to breathe. Right. And if someone has, outside of what's happening with the pandemic, but if someone has a very severe pneumonia and they're not able to breathe, then respiratory therapy, those things are important. Even rehab to get somebody stronger in some way with their lungs is all necessary. But unless that pneumonia is cleared and they're able to breathe, nothing else can really happen. Right. So similarly, the job of the brain is to think. Right. And when people are depressed, they can't think. And when you can't think, it's harder to work through things. And when that clears a little bit, like the pneumonia clears, it doesn't mean your lungs are in great shape. It doesn't mean that there's not underlying asthma or something underneath it. But there are skills, tools, and things that can be done in order to make somebody feel better.
Amazing. I mean, you've been doing this for a number of years. Any personal stories or examples that you would be able to share with us?
I mean, I have tons of stories, but one that really sticks out the most is I had somebody who, when I first got the machine, who was so incredibly depressed, and I ran out of options. And there was another person as well. And I said, well, I have TMS now. Let's go ahead and do it. And insurance didn't cover it or anything. And I said, doesn't matter. I will treat you. It's fine. Changed his life.
Wow. Wow.
Right. I mean, he has never been that depressed again. And he was depressed for years and years and years and years. And I, you know, another woman who experienced a ton of trauma, who was on medications for, I mean, almost every medication known to man. And we took her off the medications, or man and woman, I guess is a better way to say it, but, or human. But, you know, she's medication free right now. And she has remained in remission. And even women who, you know, who felt like they couldn't get pregnant because they wouldn't, you know, they would get so depressed. I mean, there's this just, I mean, I have these people in my mind and I can't get pregnant again. I'll get so depressed and I don't want to take medication. I'm like, there's something that we can do.
I understand that a lot of folks who come to TMS, having failed with medications or simply not wanting to take that route on a long-term level. But let's just say somebody has these two options in front of them and they're equally open to, you know, medication, psychiatric medication intervention, or TMS. Would you say one is preferential over the other?
You know, I think that's where autonomy and feasibility comes in, and mm-hmm. the most important thing. You know, all things being equal, right? You know, TMS requires a big commitment. You
right.
know, when people are coming in for, you know, every day for, you know, 5 days a week for 6 weeks, you know, and really seven because it's 36 sessions, right? And then the taper, they're committing to something. In general, is it, and some people just can't do it. Like even in the postpartum, when trying to treat women with postpartum depression, having somebody there at home with every day or being right. able to take, you know, so sometimes it's a feasibility thing. All things being equal, if someone had failed several antidepressant medications and continued to fail them, and that's where the distinction would be made. I would be like, look, you know, we've, you know, and there's data from studies like the STAR-D trial and the Texas algorithm that show after a certain amount of antidepressants, it doesn't exclude antidepressants, but it's probably better to hedge our bets with something else.
Right, right, and diversify.
Exactly.
My understanding is that there are actually different types of TMS treatments in their length and maybe in what they're accomplishing. Some take 20 to 30 minutes, whereas others take as little as 2 to 3 minutes. Is that accurate?
Yes.
And what would be the difference between them?
Coils have developed and changed in terms of what they do and the kind of transcranial magnetic stimulation that they give. So if you look at the idea of the, you know, the first coil that was FDA approved, the NeuroStar coil, right? That one is 3,000 pulses mm-hmm. with a certain, you know, cool off period, because that's one of the rate limiting steps is how much the machine can give without overheating. Mm-hmm. And that could be 20 to 30 minutes. Now there's coils where you can do it quicker with, you know, even with the repetitive TMS. And then there's other different models. There's deep brain TMS, and there's something called Theta Burst. And Theta Burst is a different algorithm, and a Theta Burst is an EEG wave. And a Theta Burst is what is present in the cortex in kind of a normal rhythm. It can in some ways disappear when people are depressed, and you can institute that theta burst. But theta waves are present when you're really thinking, when you're mindful in an experiential way in some way. And so instead of RTMS, there's theta burst stimulation, and mm-hmm. ITBS can be done in about 2 to 3 minutes. And so the real kind of express TMS, they call it, is with a theta burst model.
And they're all FDA approved.
So there's FDA approval and FDA cleared, right? That's mm-hmm. that's a little bit different, right, in some way. And so these machines, like for the NeuroStar machine is FDA approved going back in 2009, and then they get FDA cleared because they're a medical device, mm-hmm. right? Then you have to have clearance and then approval. I don't know what all the approval status is for everything, but anything that's cleared in my mind, and the technology has been there for so long, it's study driven. Like, does it work and how does it compare? And the answer is, it's pretty amazing. It works.
That is truly, and it's non-invasive, and yet its impact, obviously over sustained time, seems almost as organic as if you worked on it. I mean, it's not requiring the constant dependency on a pill or so. It's extraordinary. And talking about the success of remission, have you had clients who've never needed a tune-up, have had TMS, and have just been sort of good to go indefinitely?
Yeah, I mean, I've had people who have TMS who, I mean, I've treated, I've never seen again. So in some way, they went back to their primary practitioner. Wow. In some way that responded and they haven't come back. There's others that have. I mean, most people, again, require some type of maintenance treatment in some way, whether therapy or not. But there's certainly like that very first person, you know, when was that? 10 years ago? He's never done TMS again.
Wow. Wow. I'm going to ask you.
Maintained on his medication, but, you know, he lives a much better, happier life.
That's so noble and beautiful that the effects are so long and enduring.
And you know what's really nice? I'll just add one more thing to that. Even for people that recur, right, and they get that 2-week booster and they're like, oh, I already feel better. I mean, it just gives the sense that there is something there.
Right.
That they can rely on and count on, where the illness of depression doesn't have to complicate as much the sadness or take away any of the joy.
Right. The following question I want to ask you, it might be coming from a supreme place of ignorance, but it's just something that
supreme.
It's intrigued me for the longest time. Using this sort of technology to outwardly magnetically stimulate parts of the brain, suppose that was directed at the prefrontal cortex. Could that help inspire activity, thoughts about morality, existentialism for somebody thinking about life not in those terms? Would this method potentially be able to help other sections of the brain become more active and more engaging? You know, it's almost like, you know, if that were the case in 10 years, it's like, you know, you want to date my daughter, you got to do TMS for the prefrontal cortex for 36
hours. That's really fun. And you got to do it at my office and you got to pay triple. And it's going to hurt.
So what do you say to that sort of?
No, I already have a plan for threatening my daughters would be suitors. So let's look at it this way. Let's just talk about wellness and illness in some way, and then we'll look at treatment and then get to your question. You know, one of the things that people are concerned about, well, if I do this, will it change my character? Will it change my personality? If I take a medication, will it do that? And what I tell people is treatment will only let you be who you are. Illness prevents you and makes you what you're not, right, in some way. And so with regard to
that's such a beautiful statement, just even to pause and let that sink in, that wellness is really you amplifying all of that goodness that really is part of your integrity. It creates more alignment. Illness is really taking you away from that, who you are.
Right, exactly. And I think, you know, when I say to people, you know, again, the pneumonia analogy, if you had a cough and a cold and everything, and you went to the doctor and you asked how, you know, they asked how you felt, you would say, I feel bad. You wouldn't say, I am bad, right? Where in depression, you know, I feel bad equals I am bad. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is it makes you what you're not. Right. And it's painful. And treatment just allows you to be who you are, right? To be able to live your life. And so as people become more of who they are in some way, as there's more wellness, I mean, cortical function and that executive function is the expansive part. And even if you look at, like we talked about, theta rhythms in some way, existentialism, all that other stuff, you know, can be coded in some way in theta rhythms in the anterior cingulate cortex and the other cortex. Giving TMS in some way, if you look at performance metrics, right, pre and post performance TMS has a performance enhancing effect on tasks, but that's because you're activating that cortical circuit. You're activating, you know, it's like taking your Mac, right, and all of a sudden upgrading it, like by adding in, like, you know, a RAM in some way, but then, you know, and then it performs at a higher level. But taking that, you know, and changing the process in which someone thinks, probably not, except that it would open the ability, if you're not depressed, to consider many other things, right? But if the idea was, you know, the goal of spirituality, mindfulness, being able to be connected to a lot of kind of other spaces, that I think is a personal goal. But the more that you can do that in some way, that is a thinking model. And the more you can think, the less thoughts you have.
Right.
And, you know, and thoughts are important, but, you know, you can't say, let me thought about it. You can say, let me think about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I think, therefore I am, not I have thoughts, therefore I am. I used to say, I think, therefore I'm leaving this class because it's boring. But really what he was saying is thinking is what makes us individuals.
Right.
Whereas, other kind of reptiles or those things, they have thoughts, but hamsters don't think about the polystyrene component of their cage and wonder about, you know, climate change. You know, they just have thoughts. So thinking is the kind of gateway to everything you're talking about.
Wow, that is interesting. Are there any downsides? Are there any risks associated with TMS?
Yeah, I mean, everything has kind of a risk associated. The first risk with TMS is making sure that no one has any metal implants in their head, because it is a magnet, and the magnet is an MRI strength magnet. And just like if someone were to get an MRI, and you can't have any metal in that area. Mm-hmm. Then you look at kind of the other risks of TMS. Now, I did TMS. I wanted to know what it was like, and you have to set up a motor threshold, which is how much stimulation there is. And of course, my thick head was like off the charts. And it feels like a woodpecker. It's very odd. It doesn't touch you, but it feels like this tapping sensation. For some people, they can get a headache. And when they do, we can pre-treat them. Now, you know, it can also treat headaches and migraine disorders in some way. So it's not like it's creating a problem, but it's uncomfortable. And it can create muscle.
How long after the treatment would there be an onset? And does that headache persist? Or is it just more of a one-time sort of effect?
It's transient. I mean, you know, sometimes people get it just because it's uncomfortable. Sometimes the strength is pretty high. But, you know, at first, you know, again, people accommodate to it. So to your answer, they might get a headache at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I can't imagine doing this for all these sessions. And then they come in and they look forward to it because they don't notice it anymore. They're watching TV and being stimulated by something else. And it pretty much goes away. I've never had anyone who had just persistent headaches in some way that weren't a continued treatment.
Right.
So it's transient and short-lived. And for the people that are worried about it, we can pre-treat them with Motrin or Tylenol.
Right.
The only other major issue is a risk of seizure. Mm-hmm. Now, what does that mean, right? When we kind of look at and recognize where we need to treat people, we have to know how much motor stimulation they need, which is at their motor strip, right? And so that creates action. And so seizures are usually either, you know, consciousness or motor disorders. Long story short, the incidence of seizure in TMS is probably the same or maybe even less than some antidepressants, right? It's one in about 3,000 or 30,000 treatments. Now, I've done more. I've never seen a seizure. If it happens, it were to happen in the chair as opposed to like an antidepressant treatment. It doesn't require like paramedics or anything. It's a certain type of seizure in some way, and you just stop the treatment and, you know, and it goes away. So even if someone has a history of seizure disorders, which people have had, can you use TMS? Yes, you can. It just changes the paradigm a little bit and you have to be more specific. But, that's the risk that kind of scares people a little bit. But when you put it in context, it's minimal at best.
Right. That's interesting. And are there any other disorders besides for depression that it is effective in treating?
Yeah, I mean, so anything that depression is layered on, I look at it as kind of fertilizer for any other disorder, right? So if you have base OCD and depression, you're fertilizing that OCD and making it worse. And so sometimes when I've treated treated people's depression, some of the other symptoms, like even generalized anxiety, mm-hmm. obsessive compulsive disorder, those things have gotten better, mm-hmm. right? Now there's, you know, even bipolar depression, now there's, I think there might even be an indication now of treating bipolar depression, not just unipolar depression with TMS, like with ECT. You know, I've had success with bulimia and eating wow. disorders, impulse control disorders, in treating, you know, people have gotten better with their depression and their bulimia has slowed down some, just like antidepressants can work for that.
You know, so there's impulse control disorders would really open up the doorway yeah, to almost like exactly. all addiction, if from a broader perspective.
Yeah, and with regard to addiction, I don't know if there might be data. It's just not my specialty, mm-hmm. but the idea of certain types of impulse control, and you know, if you look at, you know, OCD has impulse control wow. features, and there's successful paradigms and treatments. You know, they're a little bit different for OCD, and in general, anxiety disorders can respond to generalized anxiety. So it has. It's not as narrow as major depressive right. disorder, but it certainly doesn't include everything. It's even data in the past about hallucinations decreasing with TMS, with schizophrenia.
That is profound and so insightful. It's been such a pleasure having you here with us today. Thank you, Dr. Sprago, for joining us on the Discover You podcast. We truly appreciate you taking the time. And thank you, audience, for joining us too. Hope you enjoyed today's episode of Discover You. And at Montier, we want you to know that you're not alone on your journey. For inspiration, you can find us at MontierBehavioralHealth.com, as well as on YouTube and all the other social media platforms. Wishing all of you a day full of vibrant health and joyful connections. See you next time.